Welcome to the newest episode of the Little House Book Club. The Little House Book Club is family-friendly and listener-supported, which means no commercials. If you would like to share your thoughts or suggest a book or author, please email me at mark@walnutgrovecast.com. Today I have Kelly Kathleen Ferguson on. She is an author. She wrote the book My Life as Laura, How I Searched for Laura Ingalls Wilder and Found Myself. Her work has appeared in the Gettysburg Review, New England Review, Story South, Fiction Southeast, Witness, McSweeney's, Internet, Tendency, and other publications. Welcome to the show, Kelly. How are you?
Hi, Mark. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you for taking the time to do this.
I'm in Ohio. I'm in the middle, so
I'm in the middle.
I'm avoiding floods and forest fires right now, though we're getting a little of the residuals of both.
Yeah. But, hopefully it remains just a little bit.
Yeah, it's just like Laura. She wound up in Missouri. I think you just wind up in the middle sometimes.
Yeah, you know, but a lot of the people who are I'll call them characters, but the people who are written about kind of tended to go west, like, you know, California and I think Oregon and a number of things like that. So I don't know. They kind of escaped.
Right.
Laura, though, she kind of flied around and stuff. So I guess first and foremost, did you always have a love of the Laura Ingalls Wilder books?
I did. My Laura Ingalls Wilder journey begins at my 6th birthday when my mom gave me the yellow boxed set. Mm-hmm. And it was just like obsessive love from first read. You know, I read them, you know, I've been reading them over and over basically ever since. And I loved to play Laura Ingalls Wilder as a kid. I'm like growing up in Alabama. So the idea of the West was very exotic.
Yeah, sure.
So, I loved to play Prepare for Winter and, you know, barricading against wolves. And I was an only kid until my brother arrived at age 8. So I had to play all the roles. And yeah, so it started young. Like we bonded and Laura was kind of my BFF.
Oh, that's awesome.
Now growing up. Yeah. But I've definitely started at a tender age and kind of grew up with Laura. And, you know, I feel like I'm still growing up with Laura at 53 because, I mean, I think that's one of the things I learned in my book that, because I never really researched the person until I started writing the book. And I think she's just somebody who got more interesting with age, I think. And
I find in the past maybe 15 years, there's so much new information that's being discovered. You know, from different researchers, and there are so many amazing researchers who are kind of just constantly digging through, whether they're at going through Rose's letters at the Hoover Museum, library, and or just kind of rediscovering things or even throwing new opinions out there. I think it's really great.
No, it's interesting to me. It's one of the things I didn't really understand. I mean, I just kind of started out of a personal interest, right? I was just kind of... my book kind of comes from, I wound up moving out to Montana for graduate school. And as I was driving through South Dakota, I kind of had this freak out because I saw the turnoff for Desmet, South Dakota.
Oh, right.
You know, I'm just like, what?
I think that
it was a real place suddenly, because the books are technically fiction. It just kind of spurned this whole, like, my heart's palpitating, and I just was like, I have got, you know, I need to go to there. I lost track of what I was talking about.
No, basically, you're making a move, and you see this sign, and you're just, right. It just kind of a light bulb in your head.
Yeah. So, and that was at, I was almost 40 at the time. So, yeah, like, I think it just was when I started this whole Laura Ingalls Wilder journey, I had no idea how complicated it would be or how I just had this thing. I'm going to retrace the journey in a prairie dress. I'm going to actually go to these places in order of in the order of the books. And I just want to go. I just want to see it. Like, I love driving. Obviously, a car is a little more efficient than a covered wagon.
Right, and we have to count our blessings with the with the invention of the automobile versus the, I don't know, 4 mile per hour wagon.
yeah, think about that. I rode a wagon for, I think it took like 5 minutes at one of the, you know, they have these pageants in South Dakota.
Sure.
And I was just like, my butt already hurts. And so I really had a, and that was with modern day tires.
You know, it's really weird because we in the first book in Little House in the Big Woods, you know, it was the, I just recently read it really slowly. I first read it around the same age as you when I first discovered the books, but I'm reading through it and I'm thinking the distance that they're talking about traveling is really not that far, you know, to today's standards. Like when Pa is taking his furs to go trade, he's going away for, I think it was, I estimated he would be walking for like 10 hours. It's
right.
That's insane. Yeah. 10 hours there, 10 hours back, you know, and
yeah, like when that was kind of one of the, my first, Pepin was, you know, my first stop, right?
Yeah.
So I just, you know, you drive out to the replica log cabin and
oh
I was
my God,
like,
there's Lake Pepin, you know?
There's Pepin. It's like a nice little tourist town.
Sure.
And, you know, it's actually really, it was beautiful though. I would say, you know, it's kind of interesting to me, I think was the nature was the discovery about what nature remained, what was destroyed. Like the Big Woods, obviously way history. I've talked to people who live in Wisconsin. They say if you go to northern Wisconsin, you can kind of experience some of that Big Woods feeling where there's still the big trees and everything. But yeah, like right now it's just farmland and homes and, you know,
now, I think you- the only,
in my book, I write the only wildlife I saw was a basset hound.
Aww.
No, he was very cute, but it
off
wasn't
leash,
like,
yeah.
wasn't a panther or a bear. So.
But you know, Pa might have thought it was if it was dark enough.
That's right. You just don't know. So, yeah.
So do you lean towards the books? Like, what do you think of the television series?
Well, you know, I've come around on it. I have to admit, as a kid, and I do have a little, I was like, oh, I hope he doesn't read my rant. I have a mid-book rant about the show that's kind of written, I think, from my grade school perspective. Mm-hmm. And I think it was, you know, when you read books, you have such an idea in your head of what it is.
By the way, I don't judge people who don't care for their, for either one. I've met people who love the TV show and they're like, yeah, I'm not going to bother with the books. And that's crazy to me. I just look at it as one kind of universe. But yeah, I mean, I fully look at the TV show as like 95% fiction.
Right, right, right. And that, I think, but it was this thing though. I did kind of come around on it because I think I just had this indignation of the super fan, you know. And, but then kind of as I, you know, like we were talking about how the Lara world expands and I, you know, went to Lara Palooza and you start meeting, stars of the show who are really mostly really nice people, and interesting in their own right and complicated. You sort of, once I understood the show was a melodrama, I think I kind of came on board and you meet Alison Arngrim and she's hilarious.
Yeah. She's amazing.
I read her book and I sort of was like, oh yeah, like Nellie Olson was honestly the one character that really felt on point me. And it was more like Pa's a pretty boy and things like that. That kind of,
but you know, you get Dean Butler who played Almanzo, and Dean Butler as a person and an actor, he has a lot of respect for the history of the series and has done a lot to archive some of the music of the time. And so I like that. I like that these characters that played dramatized versions of real characters went back and actually embrace the actual history that surrounds those characters.
Yeah, sure. I respect that too. And it's just kind of, yeah. So I kind of came around on it, you know, cause I think I had this, I still have, I was just a kid when the show came out after I'd read the books and I was just like, what is this? This is an outrage. You know? Cause I, you know, Laura's very stoic and always takes things on, you know, and the family is more serious. Then suddenly there's all these violins and wailing and wringing of hands. And I was
dear
like,
dear Michael Landon. Yeah, it's you get like
I get it though.
It's one the books you're in love with, and then this other thing comes out, and it's like, what is this all about? I fully understand what you mean.
Yeah, yeah, And now I think like adaptations of books are pretty on point.
Mm-hmm.
I think the just graphics are better and people sort of do more faithful adaptations because they want to bring the readership along. But back in the day, I mean, nothing was more disappointing than the Narnia cartoon. CGI had not been invented yet. And just, so I think just today in general, like when young adult books are translated, they do a more faithful job.
Yeah. I worked on a movie that was adapted from one of my favorite book series, which is His Dark Materials by Philip Pullman.
And have
you had the opportunity to read it?
Yeah. I read those. Those are great.
I think they're an incredible, incredible book. It's like a much more mature Harry Potter. And on top of it, you have this like kick-ass girl who's like just taking down the entire universe. So, yeah. And I worked for Scholastic and we were doing a film with like Nicole Kidman and it was terrible. It was the worst thing ever. It was all CGI. I think it was the Golden Compass, but yeah. HBO recently rebooted it again with Scholastic's input, but they did a much better job on season one. Season two was adult fest. You know, I don't look at these books as something that's filmable. So I was really happy with season one, but they blew it.
Yeah. The movie, I was like, wow, you got Daniel Craig and Nicole Kidman and somehow you still, you know.
Yeah. Yikes.
So maybe it's not 100%. And yeah, I do think sometimes some books just aren't translatable.
Sure.
I mean, that's why they're books.
And that's life. You know, I fully accept that. So did anything happen to inspire these books? Is this something that you had in the back of your head since you were like, you know, a little kid and you were like, you know what? I have the opportunity to do this and I'm doing it.
Oh yeah. No, I mean, I think it was, you know, I don't know. I'm a late bloomer. Like I kind of had this thing. I graduated from college and then I just didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up. And, sure. You know, I graduated during the crash of the early 90s and I just kind of wound up, you know, working in restaurants and playing in bands. And I thought I wanted to be a musician, but I'm not really a musician. I think I was really hiding from being a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of my life just crashed around 38 where I just, you know, I was tired of working week to week to pay my rent. And I just was like, so I just decided to do something practical and start over in creative writing. Which is a joke, but I just started applying for MFA programs and then I kind of was driving, you know, and I think it's just something about going out west. Like I had been stuck. I'd been stuck in a long-term relationship. I'd been stuck in this idea that I'm going to pursue music, even though that dream was obviously, you know, by the time you're in your mid-30s, you're like, maybe music, my rock star life isn't going to happen.
Yeah, I've been in a lot of bands. I play some instruments and just something.
Yeah. It's a tough world out there.
But it doesn't mean that you're not extremely creative and that creative need. You need to release that creativity. So, of course,
turning it into
this project of traveling to the locations as Laura. I mean, you're dressing the part and you're actually experiencing these places that you've loved for almost your entire life.
Yeah.
I think that's great.
And I had this thing where I was like, I needed to start over. And I had terrible social anxiety. Which is kind of, you know, I look back at this book and I would have, you know, done so many more interviews and talked to more people. But I think just that I did it at the time was this huge accomplishment. And I was, you know, it was weird. Like people don't travel by themselves to Laurengel's Wilder country. Mm-hmm. They travel with their families. They travel with their partners. So a woman traveling alone in a prairie dress was, you know, a little bit of an oddity, I guess. So, yeah, but I kind of had from Laura, I had this idea of you can move west and reinvent yourself and start over. And so I thought, and Laura's always so brave, right? Like she always has this moment where she's like, oh God, I'm terrible. You know, I don't want to do this thing. I'm scared to do this thing. Mm-hmm. She's like, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it anyway. And so I think and she always kind of comes, you know, she likes to be successful. And mm-hmm. I like to be successful.
But Laura also had some social anxiety. Right. You know, she wasn't very keen on strangers and or outsiders. You know, this is something that was really instilled upon her. I don't know as an adult if that existed, but
right.
It certainly was in the writing in the books.
And I think I related to that a lot, but you just grab Carrie's hand and you have to be brave for your little sister.
Sure.
So, yeah. So, I think the having the fear and doing it anyway, I kind of got that from Laura. And yeah. And so I think that was kind of what inspired the book. And yeah, Laura inspired me to be brave.
Yeah. I think if there's one thing you can take from it, and I'm sure there's a long list of things you took from it, but that's a great thing to, you know, get from it. When you started writing it or were writing it or about to publish it, did you realize that the audience that you would be presenting this to was kind of a hidden large audience? it sounds like you were part of that audience.
It kind of started just informally. Like, I was just going to do this project, but then I would just kind of casually mention what I was working on to people. I go, oh yeah, I'm working on this book about learning. And people go, oh, I love
everybody, you know?
I mean, now we're kind of moving into the Harry Potter generation, but there's still, so just kind of that. And then I started to realize, like, oh, and I'm doing research, and you find a band called the Half Pints, and you start.
Is that a real band?
It was.
I'm going to dig them up.
And just kind of, and so kind of the further I got into it, the more I realized there was an audience, a built-in audience, and I didn't know how big it would be. And, you know, I released on a small press, so it's kind of hard. The challenge there is people knowing that your book exists, because you're not, you know, you're not going to get on NPR, you're not going to be a starred review in Publishers Weekly, all these things. So, but I did, you know, my book has sold pretty well just by word of mouth and there being this audience out there of people who buy every book about Laura Ingalls Wilder.
You know, there's one trend that I've found. I've spoken to quite a lot of, whether it be people involved with the Little House on the Prairie television show or historians, everybody, including you, everybody's kind of just nice, you know, everybody kind of gets along, and there's, I've done other podcasts with different genres, and it's just not that way. There's always, like, somebody, a curmudgeon, who's like, I hate that. You know, it's like, don't bring it up. But I don't know, right across the board, and I know that the only thing that you can really say that is a struggle is very often the literature fans versus the television fans. And, you know, if that's the worst thing that you could say about these people, then it's really not that bad.
Right, yeah. And I still think it's not that. Whatever. It's not this line in the sand where people are being haters or anything. Exactly. Right. So yeah, like at Laura Palooza, you know, everybody gets together and sings karaoke and, you know,
it's crazy.
One of my favorite memories is like all, going to Mankato and we're all in our prairie dresses and we went out for karaoke and there's some, this, dude softball team out there celebrating and they're like, what is happening?
And it's funny because it's like now you can say that you were in Mankato doing karaoke. I mean, who can say that?
With 10 other people in a prairie dress.
Right. It's those are moments that few people can say that they have. Many people would say they want to experience that, especially if they're fans of the entire series but or the brand. But yeah, how many people can actually say they did it? And you can. So that I think that's
Laura Palooza. It's a good group. Like you said, people are just nice. And I think, you know, I went by myself because I sort of became this person who's, you know, I realized, you know, maybe I need to stop waiting for permission to do things and just, you know, you're 40 and you go, well, when am I going to do things? Like, maybe now.
So you bring up the dress a lot. Could you talk about your journey in finding the dress? And the one thing I have to just say that I was kind of curious about is you referred to the dress as a costume, but do you think by the end it was a uniform?
No, it still felt like a performance.
Okay. Like, but that's okay.
And what I've also kind of realized is, you know, I've done readings without the dress and people just love the dress for some reason. Like if I do it in just normal clothes, I don't sell any books.
It's like LARPing.
But if I dress up in the dress and everybody's like, oh, this woman, she's a character. She's fun. We like her. And I'll read the same chapter and whatever. But if I don't wear the dress, then, and after a while it did get a little bit like, okay, the book's been out a little while now. Like, you know. But yeah, I pretty recently did a visiting writer gig in Kearney, Nebraska, and my friend was just like, "Will you please wear the dress?" And I'm like, "Eh, you know." Since then, but you know, still zips. But yeah, but it's like it just goes better with the dress. But so anyway, yeah, I don't know what that was, but I thought I needed to do it in a dress. It just sounded fun to me, and I've always, I think, from being in a band, I like costumes.
Sure.
And I like kind of having, I love Halloween. I lived in New Orleans for a while. I love that. People are like, any excuse for a costume.
Yeah. No, you were visiting the different locations, the different historical locations. Did you have a favorite? And what was the first one that you were able to experience?
Well, I did it in order of the books. So Pepin was, I did this thing where I kind of just closed my eyes and barreled east. And then started from Pepin. I mean, really, I like them all.
Mm-hmm.
I really did. You know, like in Walnut Creek and, you know, Walnut Grove, I loved being in Plum Creek. You know, like that was just kind of a magical experience being in Plum Creek. It was really hot because it was the summer. And so I will say once I got to the High Prairie of South Dakota, like that was pretty magical. Like just being out on the prairie in South Dakota was probably my most magical experience, just standing in the middle with the wind whooshing the grass and the big sky and the puffy little white clouds.
Right. You feel like Laura, right? You feel like you're in one of the chapters of the book.
Right. And she describes those settings so amazingly. And so, and you're like, oh, now I feel it though. And so, yeah.
How long was the journey that you went on?
I 10 days. I like just did it.
Yeah, but that's great. I mean, that. I mean, by the end, were you ready to go home? Or was
Two weeks. Okay. I have to read my own book. It was 2 weeks. Yeah, 2 weeks.
By the end, though, did you feel like, all right, I accomplished this? I'm so happy I did it, and I just, I have to document this. This is just a unique experience.
Yeah, I mean, I did go with the idea that I wanted to write about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's the man, the little writer man behind the curtain.
Sure.
But I didn't know, you know, I was totally green. I was not an experienced writer. Now I know, like, you write a book proposal and you get money and, you know, whatever.
Yeah, you get an agent, yeah.
You get an agent or whatever. I didn't know any of that. So I was just like, I got this $1,000 from the university as a travel grant, which for me was a lot of money at the time, mm-hmm. enough to pay for gas. And, you know, hotels back then were still pretty cheap.
$1,000 is $1,000, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Especially when you're a grad student. So, and your annual salary is $10,000.
Yeah, you just go, you live on ramen.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. So, but yeah, no, I did have this, you know, so I took all these notes and took video and pictures, which is actually what you're supposed to do. So
sure.
I teach feature writing and writing, and that's what I tell my students to do. And somehow, I guess I just lucked out and I knew somehow instinctually that you should do that. But yeah, I think I just decided that, well, if it turns out, if I get a book out of this, great. But if it's also just this really cool thing I got to do, also great.
Now, have you applied, I guess, like the 19th century mentality at all to your actual just everyday life, like in the way you might cook, or if you have certain hobbies that that are like that, like, I don't know, cheese making. Some people go that way. Some people don't, you know?
Yeah, no, I'm not crafty. I mean, I'd say I'm a 19th century spirit and then I just seem to keep moving and starting over because mm-hmm. I'm a crazy dreamer. I have that. But no, I'm not crafty.
You're not ready to kick the pig bladder around.
I did have a book release party, and I cooked recipes from Barbara Walker's Little House Cookbook.
Yeah, Barbara Walker, she's really, really a nice person. And
yeah.
Her book, the re-release of her book is so nice, and it's so it's like mid-century kind of style. So if people, you know, a lot of people are into this like 50s and 60s kitchen look. So
yeah. I'm surprised I haven't gotten it as a gift yet. Usually,
you will. But, it's like a beautiful hardbound copy.
Yeah, yeah. But that's like my, you know, it's just my family when they're like, "What do we get her for Christmas?" I usually get whatever.
This. Yeah. But yeah, all the photographs, everything is updated. It's pretty awesome.
Oh yeah, no, I'm gonna get. I love the cookbook. So yeah, I'm not necessarily crafty. I do like to cook, and it was fun to throw a 19. Although the food mostly is kind of like okay, bacon grease and corn and beans.
Yeah. How do you render lard?
Yeah. A friend of mine, she actually had. She's a hunter. I was in Ohio at the time where I am now. She was a hunter from Alaska, and she had, smuggled all this frozen elk.
Nice.
So we had actual game.
Wow.
Which was delicious at the party, and so that was pretty cool.
Something Laura would really like. I mean, she likes bear, she likes bear meat.
She likes food. I think that's one thing Laura and I have in common is that we really, really, really like food.
You know, food is such a big part of the books. It's one of those things I kind of remember when I was younger, just kind of visualizing even the stored food, like when the girls are up in their up in the attic with the big, huge pumpkins, and you get this visual of an Alice in Wonderland. It's just a really colorful and wonderfully written collection of books, and it just follows the entire series as well.
Yeah, I love books that feature food as a part of the cultural. Like, I think it's like you can't really, to me, I guess I have the Anthony Bourdain thing, you can't understand people until you understand their food. That brings to the situation. But, so, I did want to circle back because you asked about how I got the dress.
Yeah, like I know there was a journey as to locating the right dress. You weren't ready to just like put on a modern dress and go to town.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, I was not a big planner back in those days. So I, it's like basically it was like the day before I was about to leave and I was all like, oh, I need a dress.
And guess.
I guess if I'm going to do this dress thing today would be the day to go buy it. But I was in Missoula, Montana at the time and it's since closed, which is sad, but they used to have a Mr. Higgins Vintage something in Fines. Again, I gotta have to look at my own book to see what it's called. Mr. Higgins Vintage Clothings and Costumes of Missoula, Montana. And I walked in and, you know, there's the woman behind the counter and it smells kind of musty, like old clothes do. And I was just like, I need a prairie dress. And then she's like, oh, I got too bad, you know, but they just had a production of Oklahoma and I'm cleared out because usually I have tons of prairie dresses because I don't know if you live out west, prairie days are a big thing.
Yeah.
Like I lived in Utah and they have Pioneer Day to celebrate the Mormons. And so that's one thing I learned about living out west is prairie dresses are actually a kind of normal thing to have in your closet. But she had a few left, and I was just kind of lucked that one of them actually fit.
So it was like a magical experience. You're like,
it zipped up, and it actually looks pretty good. Like it was like a semi-flattering dress. So, but it's not really traditional. I had kind of like a low scoop neck and all these ruffles and stuff like that. So
it's a modern twist on
modern twist. So, at my first stop, I got the apron and bonnet, and then I kind of felt properly covered with the apron up to my neck.
Yeah, but that's pretty awesome. I mean, to go in, and you just would put this on when you would go to the locations. And
yep, I would put it on. I wore it most of the time, actually, like driving, you know, because I just was kind of curious about how people would react to me. Definitely at the actual home sites, people were a little bit more, oh, okay, there's one of those Laura Ingalls Wilder people.
Right, it's kind of like, oh, we got another one today.
Yeah, another one. Get a load of that, Jim, you know. Sometimes I would take it off because I just needed to be, like, I need to go out to eat and just be me.
Sure.
And just at the end of the day, I, you know, because of my social anxiety, I would just want to get Dairy Queen and go to my room.
But do you think wearing it helped with social anxiety? I mean, you know that you're going to attract attention with this.
Yeah.
And embracing it is, you know, a pretty bold move for somebody who's dealing with social anxiety.
Yeah, I think like a lot of kind of artsy people, and you probably know a lot of musicians like this too, you kind of have this love-hate relationship with performing. Mm-hmm. Like, you want to be on stage and you want people to notice you, but then you're like, I'm completely tapped out and I have to go run back to my dressing room. And
but yeah, to be on stage though, to perform for, you know, an hour is one thing, but to do performance art in a way, in, you know, actually live the part is, I think, a completely different thing. It takes a different type of person
to go
into the public and do it.
Right. Yeah. It was weird. Do you know Melanie Stringer? I don't know if she's been on the podcast.
No, I don't know the name.
She does a Laura Ingalls Wilder reenactment.
Oh, okay.
So she really does, she becomes Laura Ingalls Wilder and performs Laura Ingalls Wilder.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, and when I first saw her at Laura Palooza, she had the brown poplin dress, like authentic, and I just turned green. Like, I was just like, the dress is so beautiful, because she does the authentic clothing and everything.
Yeah, like some people, I mean, you have the Civil War reenactors where it's like everything has to be appropriate and correct, and it just needs, and I can really respect that. And I guess the bonnet heads across the board, there's different levels of them.
Sure. Most of us are just kind of happy to have fun.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it's all about at the end of the day, right?
Not that I would say no to an authentic brown poplin dress, but it is. I would probably wear it all the time. It'd be like any excuse. Like,
Kelly's friends, you listening?
Any readership, anybody, those people who actually sew.
I mean, you know, there is somebody out there who'll do it. You know, is something I've learned from putting requests out there. Be careful what you ask for. You might get like six of them. But what is next for you? Are you working on any projects, or
To sum up, I think one thing, and not to be spoiler alert with my book, but it's not really that much of a plotted book, but I think a lot of people got bummed because I called the boyfriend at the time my manly.
Oh.
But then he's just not an Almanzo, as it turns out. And
he's more of an Almanzo.
Yeah. So, I met my person. He's Wolfgang. He has an outlandish name.
His name is Wolfgang?
Yeah, his name is Wolfgang.
That's almost as cool as Almanzo.
Almost. But I think, without some, I got some kind of combination of an outlandish name plus Sound of the Music together.
That's awesome.
So it works out. And after, I had no idea that my Laura Ingalls Wilder kind of moving back everywhere would continue for the next 10 years. I did not know that.
Mm-hmm.
I started over in academia applying for academic jobs. And academic jobs, you just go wherever it is if you want to get a job. So here I am. I wound up in Athens, Ohio at Ohio University. I'm a teacher, mm-hmm. college professor with a man with an outlandish name. And I've written a comic novel.
Oh, wonderful.
About a woman who she's a introverted poetess, and she goes accidentally viral as a sex columnist writing under a male pseudonym. And it's I don't know if you remember, like, Ask Flint from Glamour magazine. It used to be like Ask a Dude for advice about sex or whatever.
I don't
know. Yeah. Probably you didn't read Glamour magazine.
Yeah.
But it's kind of based on that, because I kind of had this, what if Flint had been a woman the whole time?
Right.
So that's the kind of what if. So it's a romantic comedy, and I finished it, and I'm shopping that.
That's awesome. So you've been legitimately bitten by the writing bug.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I always wanted to be a writer.
Are you working on even another project? Like, is this something where you're just like, you know what, when this is done?
Oh, yeah. I've got like 10.
Good.
I like that. So, I mean, I'd also kind of love to write about Rose Wilder Lane.
It's amazing. Her whole life and existence. Before Laura's success, of course.
Right. Yeah. I think there's just a lot left to write there. So if I had another nonfiction book, I think it might be on her, or fiction. I don't know. I write both fiction and nonfiction.
Awesome. Well, Kelly, I want to thank you so much for coming on here and talking about your journey and your books and just everything that you're working on. Having your book as a part of the entire universe of Little House on the Prairie, I just think is just a wonderful thing, and all these books they're just so important. I mean, it's people writing about some of the greatest literature, in my opinion, of the 20th century. Thank you for listening to the Little House Book Club. If you enjoy Little House on the Prairie and the history that surrounds it, you might want to take a listen to Wanna Grovecast as well as the Bonnet Heads podcast. All of my podcasts are family-friendly and listener-supported. Buffalo gals, won't you come out tonight? Come out tonight. Come out.
tonight. Buffalo gals, won't you come out tonight and dance by the light of moon? Buffalo gals, won't you come out tonight? Come out tonight. Come out tonight.